Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself the Wire. A The Wire podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire
and talk about it.
Thank you so much for joining us once again for the world's only Wire podcast, The Wire. It's a show about white people trying to learn Ebonics. That is what it's about.
I believe they're called Ebalmics.
Oh, that's right. Ebalmix, because Balmer. Very good.
Yeah, they had a website about that called Ebalm's World. I should have stopped at the last one.
Wow. But, you know. You almost convinced me, though, that you didn't come up with the pun, that there was a website you were looking at.
I'm old enough for all of this.
That's always the tagline on our shows.
Yes. I'm old enough for all of this is our rating, technically. But 5 stars in a review on all of the podcast platforms and apps. Please do that. That's very nice and helps us. It makes me feel good. All right. Today, Vince and I and a very special guest are talking about from season 1 of The Wire, episode 7, One Arrest. And our guest today, you have heard him on The Young Turks. He has a great show on TikTok called Good Morning Bad News and a wonderful podcast called Power Report. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, our guest today is Dan from the internet.
Hello, humans. Good to be with y'all.
Good to have you, Dan. Thank you so much for coming on the pod to talk about The Wire with us.
I think you're our first guest that has like a legit gaming chair that you do the podcast from.
It's not even that I game. It's just because the secret tip is that the gaming chairs are by far the most comfortable.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I bought one for Francesca because I was like, I know you don't game, but you do stream. And mm-hmm. I feel like you need to be comfy. And mostly I just sit in it because I like to game. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, you don't
That's
need...
marriage.
That's what marriage is. Marriage is buying your significant other a gift that you use mostly.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's love, really.
Like that one year when you got her a DVD of The Matrix.
yeah, just so I could watch The Matrix, like AJ Soprano.
The Matrix. I haven't seen it yet.
What up, Borelli?
But so, Dan, tell us, do you like The Wire?
Yes, I do. The Wire is in... Let's call this in this phase of the pandemic. The Wire has been that show I've gone back to. So it wasn't an early pandemic show. My early pandemic show was King of the Hill, one of the greatest shows of all time. You should definitely do a pod yourself with the King of the Hill, except that's 12 seasons, so it'll never end.
Yes.
But no. So I want to binge watch The Wire mostly because I am of the age to where I missed out on a lot of like prestige TV and I am mostly unfortunately, on the internet with a bunch of people who are politically brain broken, and they've been through shows like The Wire or The West Wing, and they were experiencing those things as they came out. The closest thing I can think to that is maybe Euphoria or Game of Thrones is like a moment in TV where people would, you know, talk about it the Monday after and it would be like a big thing. And so I think the best way to kind of experience that kind of TV now is to binge it and just go through it kind of ignorant to what's happening in society right now, but also a little bit with that lens. And so when I heard that y'all were doing a Wire rewatch, I'm like, oh wow, this is what I was literally born to do. Only this.
So born, when you say born, when? Because you do seem young, like significantly younger than both Vince and I. Are you 23?
No, I'm 26. I was born in 96.
Jesus Christ, you're just a baby. You just have to, we're so old, Vince. You know, Vince and I were 26 at one point.
That's true, yeah. Long time ago.
I just want to point that out.
Is this Nixon?
Yeah, that was like during the time of Nixon. Mm-hmm. No, it's interesting because I do feel like when the show was out, it wasn't as much like people were like, wow, so this is, we're getting like, you know, the real inside look into city politics and like how the police work. I feel like people thought it was still fantasy. Whereas like now I feel like this younger generation sees it and goes, oh yeah, this is the most real ass fucking show about crime and punishment that has ever existed.
I definitely think when it came out, people probably assumed it was specifically about Baltimore and like didn't apply to them. And now it's kind of like, oh yeah, that's kind of like everywhere. Like this might be, you know, exacerbated or worse in Baltimore, but you kind of watch it and you're like, yeah, that's probably applies to most places.
Yeah. I was talking to someone recently, who is from Baltimore, and, he's a white guy from Baltimore, and I said, oh, Baltimore, cool. You ever seen The Wire? Which they probably get a lot, and it's probably the most annoying question for the people of Baltimore. But he was like, yeah, no, I've seen it. You know, it's a good show, but I don't think it really reflects well on our city. And I was like, well, first of all, it's not just about Baltimore. That's every major city in the United States.
I don't like Batman because it really puts Gotham in a bad name. Yeah. Like, it just... let me tell you, anytime I'm watching any of the Batman films or any of the superhero films, I'm just looking like a property adjuster. I'm like, wow, all these superheroes do is just cause a lot of property damage here. Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's really, there might need to be like a superhero flight to just like get away from the superhero cities out to the suburbs, because there's never any superhero movies out in the suburbs.
My property value is going to go down because of this.
Yeah, my property value in Metropolis is plummeting. Yeah, that's where Superman's from, Metropolis.
Yep.
Did I just... Okay, good. Sometimes I don't know if I know about superhero shit.
Mm-hmm. No, you do.
But yeah, that is kind of... That's like the perfect example, because it really is. It's just like, it doesn't make us look good. And when the show, The Wire was coming out, there were like, you know, city officials in Baltimore who were just like, this does not represent our beautiful city. And these are all people who are in elected positions. And
What do they say about the police department? What are they like? Worry about the depiction about the police department or anything like that?
Yeah, they're like, nope, none of this has happened. And in this episode in particular, I feel like there are these moments where I'm like, not only do I assume this is a thing that happens, but we know for a fact that like when Bird is in the box in this episode and they take a picture of him to show the jury so he doesn't look worse than when he came in, and then they rip that picture up and beat the shit out of him while he is handcuffed. Like, this is literally things that we know have happened in the Baltimore Police Department. So it's, I don't know, to say that it makes the city look bad is just like, I think it just makes the city look like it looks. It's like saying a mirror makes you look bad.
I mean, if you live in a city that doesn't get national news a lot, like I do currently, like you do get a little bit defensive when it makes it out to the broader national consciousness, because it's almost never for a good reason. Like,
that's true.
There's no like mid-sized American city that suddenly is on the front page where it's like, oh, that place is cool. It's always for like a reason, you know, of corruption or something like this.
But like, that's the thing I've ever understood is that if you're in small town America, I grew up as a coastal elite. I was just literally born that way. But like, if you're living in that area, you should just like, nothing on the news is good. You should just be happy that you're on the board.
No, that's yeah. how I feel about it.
Yeah. Although, because Vince, you have a very specific gripe, though, because since you are from Fresno and people know literally nothing about Fresno, like you, I understand why you defend Fresno, because you're not defending like the Fresno police. You're defending people like against allegations from people like me who are like, isn't Fresno mostly just Chinese food buffets and meth?
And it's just like, weird. It's because it's no. like I can say, like if you ask me about it, I'll say pretty much universally bad things. But it's like I feel like you have to know it at least a little bit. Like if when it's just from yes. the person who like drove through like a shitty corner and they're like, oh yeah, that place is all this and that. And then you're like, on the one hand, you're like, yeah, but like you can't say that. I can say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you're not allowed to say that. Even yeah. though like I went to Fresno the first time I went for a wedding that was catered by Subway. So I was like, well, this seems right.
I just love the idea of Vince being on the Fresno Tourism Board. Fresno, at least we're not Madeira.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty much it. Yeah, we're not Bakersfield. Hooray.
Yeah. Hey, isn't that cool?
Yeah.
But this is not a podcast about mid-sized California Central Valley cities. No, this is a podcast about The Wire, and we cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song. Pod.
To the garden, you better
pod.
Watch your back. Well, I beg your
pod.
Want to stay in
podcast.
Sight. If you
pod.
To Jesus, you'll save your
The Wire.
Soul. You gotta keep the devil
pod.
Down.
Pod.
Down in the hole.
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 Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else to date, we are talking about season one, episode 7 of The Wire, One Arrest, which premiered on July 14th. 2002. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that HBO Max synopsis?
Yes, sure? I love synopses written by the people at HBO Max.
Mm-hmm.
Especially this one. Rawls wants to do Jimmy so hard it makes Vince Mancini's mouth water. Oh, come on. That couldn't yeah. have been written by
that
people.
Was them. Yep. It wasn't me. Yeah, so that's the episode. And what was happening at the time that this episode came out?
That's right, Matt. We cannot evaluate art divorced from its cultural context, and we're going to put some of that cultural context back in with a little thing we call the back-in-the-day machine.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no back-in-the-day
machine tells the tale, son.
Yeah.
That's right. We're going all the way back to July 14th, 2002. So many things were going on. Dan was 6 years old. in other news, French President Jacques Chirac escaped an assassination attempt by a man described as an emotionally disturbed neo-Nazi.
So he wasn't just a neo-Nazi. He was one of those like unstable ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lone wolf.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You don't want to like get them confused with the ones who like really got their shit together, you yeah. know? You can't paint with a broad brush when it comes to Nazis. They mm-hmm. hate that.
The man pulled a fully loaded rifle from a guitar case and fired one shot before he was wrestled to the ground.
Damn, he tried to do a Desperado?
Sure. And he
was it a Fender, a Gibson?
Does it say what kind of guitar it was? Was it a PRS? That'd be sick.
You can't shoot someone with those. That's too expensive.
Yeah.
It's got the cool little eagles.
Yeah.
Yeah. He because it's France, he spent a whopping 7 years in prison. And in
rules.
Yeah,
and got Xbox Live while he was there.
Yeah. Started a Twitch stream. He's doing good now. He's got a bigger Patreon than we do.
This
it explained a lot of the rhetoric I heard on Xbox Live around those days.
Yeah, actually, all those neo-Nazis in French jails just
got now
playing Halo and saying racial slurs.
This is my favorite bullet point from the Wikipedia page. In 2011, he released an autobiography titled "A Normal Life." I wanted to kill Jacques Chirac.
That does sound like a normal life,
mm-hmm,
though.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's sort of like the guy who tried to assassinate Reagan, who now has like a normal music career now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and
Matt's
he's actually
biggest fan.
Yeah, he's great.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sure. In other news, we got stocks are a sliding, and the big headline from New York Times: retirement, a casualty of stock slide. As the owners of an Atlanta advertising agency that billed $40 million a year, Jim and Jan Pringle were featured in a cover article in Inc. magazine asking, what's the best time to retire? In January 2000, with the Dow well above 10,000, they were confident they had picked the right time. They took more than $2 million that they had made from selling their company and bought stocks. Their broker encouraged them to take a month in Europe. Instead, they moved to South Carolina, where they began building a dream house on the beach. The Pringles have since lost about 75% of their investment. Far from taking any trips to Europe, they have done what they vowed never to do: mortgaged their house and gone back to work.
Oh, I thought it was going to be stop, because once you pop, you can't stop when it comes to Pringles.
Oh, yeah, so Pringles are like that.
Uh-huh. So I'm so stupid.
Lord.
So, wait, was the... This was 2002. Yeah, the stock market had a little slippy poo after the whole 9/11 Aru thing. That
yeah,
happened.
Well, Enron and the first .com bust. And,
WorldCom. WorldStar.
Yeah.
Fairly Odd Parents was just coming on at this time in my mm-hmm. world. This is also very important news. I think you're missing some good SpongeBob episodes. Really, the bangers, the ones that are all memes now.
Uh-huh.
These
yes.
SpongeBob episodes were airing at this time.
Oh, it was the golden age of SpongeBob. That's
right.
True.
Truly.
That should be in there. So in related news, the corporate problems have put President into offensive and defensive roles. He's on the one hand, he's scolding the corporations for doing bad stuff. But on the other hand, he's fending off questions about 1990 deal mystery. Who bought Bush's shares in Harkin? It is a stock market whodunit that has withstood a decade of scrutiny. Who bought George W. Bush's oil company stock just before its value dropped? The 1990 transaction involving shares of Harkin Energy Corp allowed the future president to pay off a bank loan for his now famous $600,000 stake in the Texas Rangers baseball team. Federal regulators who examined the deal as a possible insider trade never asked. Bush says he doesn't know, and the White House declines to ask the broker who handled the transaction.
Kind of amazing, because this is like, I don't remember this scandal at all.
Nope. Yeah.
This one really, I mean, it kind of makes you think, is that why Bush did 9/11?
You know, it you'd think.
That's probably why.
That's probably why he did it.
And also, $600,000 for a stake in a baseball team? I feel like we could do that.
We need like 5 more Patreons or 105 more. I'm not really good at math, but
we
a
would
lot
need
more.
A lot of more Patreons. But yeah. I feel like it's not as expensive as I thought it would be. Then again, it's the 90s.
Well, they said a stake. They didn't say the whole team. Like, it could be
but
like
a stake.
1% of the baseball team.
Well, you get free.
Trump sold stakes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. No, but I mean, you get free tickets. Right? If you're a stakeholder, you're like, you probably get a box.
I don't know. Depends how big your stake is.
So, like, when Trump was getting elected, there was this whole deal about, you need to divest your assets. You need mm-hmm. to not have any hold of them whatsoever. This is the first time I'm hearing old W had a stake in a baseball team. Like, I know this is America, but did we not go, okay, listen, buddy, you can't. There's a conflict of interest between you on opening day answering phone calls.
Yeah, like, right.
As a commander-in-chief, also throwing out the pitch.
Like, I think he was pretty sure he was done with the baseball before he became president, but I'm sure he had, a million other things that were super relevant.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I love it. It's like, no, I'll divest from my baseball team, but we're keeping those shares in Halliburton.
Yep.
We're going to keep those going.
Yeah, the McDonnell Douglas ones, those stay. and here's one from the arts world, which feels like a sign of the times, let me tell you. Headline, Springsteen protects his new CDs online in an old-fashioned way. While the music industry scrambles to keep albums off internet before they reach stores, one highly successful artist has managed to skirt online piracy with a surprisingly low technology solution.
The artist only releases cassette tapes.
The artist, Bruce Springsteen, who has released 6 CDs of material in the internet era, with another album on the way this month, has thwarted pre-release file sharers not through digital protection or online policing, but with an old-fashioned lock-and-key approach. In the weeks before a release, his albums barely see the light of day, frustrating not only downloaders, but even music critics and other industry insiders who cannot put their hands on his work. On July 30th, Mr. Springsteen will introduce The Rising, his much-awaited first studio album with the E Street Band since 1984 on Columbia Records.
So, I love they keep calling him Mr. Springsteen. Like, please, please, Mr. Springsteen was my father.
Call me the boss.
Call me the boss, please. Wait, what is his plan here? How does it by lock and key?
Yeah, just keeping it under wraps for as long as possible. And as we all know, The Rising, who could forget that much remembered critical, I don't remember this album
acclaim.
At all.
I don't know this album at all, but it was probably sick.
Yeah.
It was on my music podcast, Audio Face. It was one of our classics of the thousands. No, not at all. I will say that, listen, this is a big problem with rappers today, how their stuff gets leaked all the time. So maybe they might want to do this lock and key approach. Just George R.R. Martin it. Just decide, hey, we're air gapping the studio. I don't want no Ethernet cables, no Wi-Fi. You know, I just droned out a cell tower down the streets. There's no possible way this is leaking at all. Like, nobody, you're getting patted down for USB drives. Everything's be airtight.
I don't think you can even do that anymore, can you? Like, now, doesn't like half of their editing software probably like
it's run, all internet based?
Yeah, it's all cloud based. So, like, there's basically, I mean, someone could probably hack that and figure it out. I don't really know.
I mean, I think nowadays people just don't care as much because, I mean, now there's no more like illegal theft of music as much as there is like legal theft of music,
right?
Where it's like,
yeah, you're not going to make anything off of that recording anyway, really, other
right,
because
Spotify is
going to
pay you 0.01 cent for every 1,000 downloads. So
yeah, get a Patreon, that's what I say.
Yeah, get a Patreon. See, that's what the boss should have done. Get a Patreon.
But that's been, I feel like we're fully contextualized now that we know that Springsteen was not letting people hear his CDs and Bush had sold some sock at least.
Yeah, probably stole it too. Oh, it's good to know. Speaking of not letting people hear songs, this is now the 7th episode of our brand new The Wire podcast. And as a lot of you have noticed and have yelled at me online about, rather than playing the Balmer B story to the guest and my co-host Vince, I've just been tacking it on at the end. I've heard you. And now we will be going back to me telling you what the Balmer B stories are.
Oh, okay.
So this week, the Balmer B stories for the episode One Arrest.
Making my way downtown with Kima and McNulty. I'm a snitch now. Hell yeah. I'm a snitch. Looking for bird in the towers. And I'll haunt you, and I'll kill you, and then I'll plunder. If I could draw out Barksdale's guys, get one of Brandon, I'm Omar.
That's Omar. Omar's okay, singing it.
I like when you tell us which perspective you're singing from.
Yeah, just people need to know that's Omar singing about stealing 1,000 vials. That's, anyways.
Yeah, I like it.
You can hear the full song at the end of this episode. Although, why would you? It's terrible. And I chose that song because it came out in 2002 and so did the season. So that's why. Yeah, let's get into it. Let's talk about this episode. This is the episode in which they show that there are two ways to do police work. The strategic way or the gypsy way. Mm-hmm. And both have their merits, but one is actually effective. So tell me, general thoughts. Vince, what did you think of this episode?
I mean, ever since we started this show, I feel like there's always been at least one Twitter reply who's like, I don't know. Does The Wire hold up? Isn't it copaganda? Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I guess this episode is maybe like the closest that The Wire gets to being copaganda. Like if you just watched this episode in a vacuum, like completely without the context of other episodes, you know, like the cops, they're coming together to sort of solve this murder and they're doing good police work. And then there's the scene where they handcuff Bird to the table and then kick the shit out of him. And it's kind of played as like a heartwarming moment. And I mm-hmm. think like in another show that would be sort of like this is cool that the cops are doing that. But I don't think The Wire was meant to be taken that way ever.
Yes.
Like I think when they wrote it, you weren't supposed to be like, oh, that's cool that they kicked the shit out of Bird. It's
right.
more just, you know, morally neutral about it. Like this is just the kind of thing that happens in a police station. I thought it was, I don't know, the writing in this episode, like on a macro level, I think is great. Like some of the dialogue doesn't land in this one. It feels weird and stilted at times, but you know, overall, like it's moving the broader story along, and I still enjoyed all of it.
Totally. I had the same thought. I was like, in a vacuum, this is the episode where if you only saw this, you would think that, because I wrote down specifically the police make a good, smart plan for once. Mm-hmm. So that taking in conjunction with them doing police brutality,
four of them make a good plan. And then like the entire leadership apparatus is like at odds with them. So,
right. Right. But Dan, did you like this episode?
Yeah, this is the wiriest Wire episode perhaps of the first season, I would say. I think it encapsulates a lot of those first season reactions. Like in my rewatch, I'm just finished the second season, so I'm on to my third. So I'm about like halfway through the entire series overall. Mm-hmm. And not to skip too far ahead, but like there are aspects of season two where I kind of missed the pacing, the kind of candor and the demeanor that you got from like the original like one season crew. Like season two does its own things, but there's mm-hmm. something about season one, how that pacing goes. Like I think it's just a charm when you're watching the first season of a show, especially an HBO show, which I believe they all are essentially the same format, just a bunch of different characters copy pasted onto them, almost like a Disney Pixar film.
Right like, sure.
I believe there is an HBO format, but no, I really enjoy this episode. I love the very beginning the most.
Yes. Oh, you mean like the cold open?
Oh, absolutely. Like when you're talking about, oh, tell me your favorite part of this episode, I'm like mm-hmm. busting 2 seconds into the clip, right? I'm like,
yes.
Oh no, this one right here. This is my shit. No.
You mean yes. the one with the
you want to go in.
When they're decoding like the pit jargon?
Yeah, exactly. And Prez all of a sudden becomes like a hood expert over here.
Yes.
I love that. I love not only that, like Prez, you know, he sort of becomes a sympathetic character by being the guy who can figure out this stuff. And then he does, and then he illustrates why he can do this by comparing it to the Rolling Stones song about
yes.
like a slave owner fucking his slaves.
Brown sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is another, yeah. I mean, if we're talking about The Wire and like, you know, things that don't age well, so to speak, I mean, mm-hmm. that is a major example. Like,
sure.
I mean, like the Rolling Stones song that's there, like they keep trying to argue around it and saying that, oh, it's meant to be an allegory of slavery. It's like not meant to cover all of those different aspects of things. It's even though it's very much written like every sort of rock song that is, I'm chasing this girl who's probably a little bit underage and mm-hmm. I'm going to like look over the shoulders and make sure the parents aren't noticing. It's got that vibe of a song to it.
Yeah.
But I think even the frontman of the Rolling Stones said, oh, in reality, I would never write this song again.
Right. Right. Yeah, of course. It is. And it makes it almost like a perfect example for Prez.
Well, because like, yeah, Mick Jagger can't like write. I mean, it's sort of a song that has like social import kind of thing. But like because it's Mick Jagger singing, it's like beavers can only build dams kind of thing. Like Mick Jagger can only sing about wanting to fuck something. And so like he can't. Like he can't, Mick Jagger can't like sing the Hurricane because it would be just about him wanting to fuck that guy. Like that's
fuck a boxer who was wrongfully accused.
Yeah, like he can't make that kind of song without people having that implication automatically.
Yeah, it is hard to make your song about slavery into like an important political anthem when you sing as horny as you do.
Yeah. When it's I don't know what album that was on, but I probably was on the one where the album cover is just a close up of his dick in jeans, and it's called Sticky Fingers. Like, like it's the subtext Rolling of all Stones the songs is like, I'm going to come.
But yeah.
That's what they call moves like Jagger, apparently. Ew.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the cold open, I thought was, I completely agree. It was just like another hilarious Wire sketch.
Little man strapped, Joe. He all the way down. We gonna start fresh on the latest tomorrow. Down from up north.
Hey, y'all's talking about some guy named Loman who's down with strep. Like he's sick. And the last part is something about how he's gonna start up a fashion lady or some shit.
Fashion lady?
He's gonna start up a fashion lady is... I mean, you know, he heard what he heard. You can't...
He says something about like... Oh, forgive me, I'm not familiar with the Tower dialects.
Hey, fluent in the Perkins, Holmes, and Latrobe Tower dialects, but I haven't quite mastered the Franklin Terrace.
He's saying they're sold out in the low rises, so tomorrow they're gonna start fresh with a new package.
Damn, how y'all hear it so good?
Gold Coast slave ship bound for cotton fields, sold in a market down in New Orleans.
The fuck is that?
Rolling Stones. First two lines to Brown Sugar. I used to put my head to the stereo speaker and play that record over and over. That explains a lot, actually.
Held his ear up against Mick Jagger's songs that are loosely related around black women and slave trade and chattel slavery.
Just listening to Mick Jagger. I listened to a British guy do a black scent in a song in the 60s, and now I understand.
I'm invited to the cookout. Now I'm in the cookout.
And then I love when they also, like, you see the pager code, and they're like, flip it over.
Turn it upside down. Four hash marks in a row, one for each G-pack.
Low for low rises.
12 at a time.
S for stinkum.
He flips it over and it just says boobless. this is my favorite thing to do with a calculator. It was a great cold open, and then we get into the episode. I've split this up into... I would say three parts. One is kind of like Jimmy and the Gypsy, which is just the story of Jimmy trying to, you know, solve his cases. Meanwhile, Santangelo is being pressured to snitch on him by Rawls and decides instead to solve a case. And then also the next segment would be One Arrest. This is just kind of all the police work that they are doing in the detail in order to, this is their smart plan to kind of get some more information without revealing the wire. And then finally, it is the Nincompoops Anonymous section in which we see Bubbles and Johnny going to an NA meeting and Bubbles kind of being touched by it and Johnny mm-hmm. being like, this is not.
This sucks. I want to do some heroin.
Yes, yeah, this is way worse than heroin.
We all bring our own, little bit of baggage to this episode. Like, for me, I really like reading the Santangelo storyline as just every stereotype about Italians, where it's like, yeah, he's kind of dumb and not good at solving crimes, but he's also very superstitious and mm-hmm. loyal to a fault and, wins the day at the end.
Yes, I loved the Santangelo storyline in this. I loved the way they weaved it in, to the main storyline. I love the way it's just, it's got a perfect arc. Let's start with that. Sant'Angelo and Rawls are at odds right now because Rawls is, you know, trying to get Sant'Angelo to basically screw over Jimmy. Beyond just regular snitching, he's trying to get something to fire Jimmy, to which is like, you know, hard to do if you're a cop.
See, so, also Prez.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and he gives him a choice, which I think is the funniest thing about his storyline. Yeah. His choice is, you either help me get some dirt on McNulty, or could you just do the thing that I literally pay you to do, which is to solve murders? And he's like, oh, man, that's impossible.
It's not my job to fuck another cop.
Tell you what, detective, I'm going to be so fucking fair. I'm going to give you the choice. Either bring me something on McNulty or go out there and do your job. Pick a file, any file.
Major.
Pick a murder and solve it. Bring me McNulty. There's no third choice.
My experience in like corporate America has essentially been this. It's either either you do like the cut rate, dirty, like not even like that dirty, honestly, but like, you know, just the nakedly political thing that does
office
nothing
politics
for the company's bottom line, yes, like makes me look good, mm-hmm, or I'd have you just do your bare minimum at your job.
Yeah,
and you're
yeah,
like, oh, clutch my pearls, heavens, yeah, God, no, not the job, not the job.
Yeah, hating the job is such an important facet of the job that you're just like, no, I can't, I don't know if I can do this anymore. It's great watching him kind of like, you see Sant'Angelo with like a manila folder at his desk and he's just like, you know, step one is open the file, and he's just like, what am I going to do? and Jay, their sergeant, Jay Landsman, looks
such,
over and
again, just such an interesting character that they just made the homicide chief like this grotesque satyr who comes in and he's eating like a fucking like a wet sandwich or something. He's eating like this disgusting sandwich. All I could pay attention to in that scene was the soggy piece of bread in his hand that he keeps gesturing with. And just like
soaked. Yeah. Soaked in
soaked
I don't
in
know
something.
What. It's like he went swimming with it and got out. He showered with the sandwich. Yeah. He's holding the wettest sandwich known to man, and he is just ripping on Sant'Angelo. And I have a clip of that.
Can't go outside and play till your homework's done, huh?
Can't do shit till I clear this case for Rawls.
Well, how old is it?
Old and cold.
Well, then, my friend, you are double fucked. Give me the card.
You sick, heartless bastard.
Come on, come on. Give me the card. She was a gypsy woman. She was a gypsy woman.
Madam fucking LaRue, Jay?
Better men than you have turned to this lucky lady in their dark night at dead ends.
You're not serious.
I don't joke when it comes to Madame LaRue. The woman, she has an unexplainable gift in matters of death investigation. She transcends the rational. Give her a call.
Like, I'd love that he is in this position in which, like, I mean, he's literally the sergeant. He wants the stats, too.
Right.
And he's like, but I don't want the stats more than I want to see if this idiot will go to this gypsy woman. And so he gives
I love
him
the intro
card
for it. That's where the other cop was looking at him like, you sadistic bastard. That's really, he is the, like, for those of you who are familiar with certain corners of the internet, like, he is the ugly bastard of the show as far as, like, ugly bastard hentai goes. Like, he is just the guy who just comes in there to just, like, ruin everyone's day. But, like, he literally gets, like, a sick sadistic thrill of it. And, again, in a typical HBO fashion, by this point in the season, you're rooting for him, too, because you get that sadistic thrill as the viewer to watch him just like hopelessly go to this like truth seer, like seer mm-hmm. beyond the dead, like lady going yeah. like, okay, if you bury this doll and like do it for 1 hour, no more, no less, and then come back, you will then have your answers. And to not like do an officer involved shooting at the entire point, like goes to actually like an amazing amount of restraint.
Just goes to a psychic who has such powers of ESP that she doesn't realize a guy named Santangelo is Italian.
You're Irish, no? Italian. Santangelo?
Oh, I love it. I love when he miss ethnicized, I don't know what you call it, misracializes.
That's racism. It's anti-Italian hatred, Matt. It I'd is. Like to call it out. That's
right. It's anti-Italian discrimination.
Saint Angelo, early martyr, patron saint of Licata, Italy, prayed for his killer with a knife still in him.
She's like she does the thing that I do when I'm giving nicknames, like on the $8 Patreon tier, where I just sort of mm-hmm. like do a string of word associations. She's like, oh, Santangelo, Saint Angelo, he's the saint of, and then just makes up some bullshit right. and gives yeah, him a little yeah. doll.
And you're not really sure.
I wish she would have given him a troll doll. But like, here's Saint Angelo. Like,
go. Just got a just gem in hair. Its belly button.
yeah. The Romans murdered him because he had a diamond in his belly button.
Mm-hmm, yes. Okay, you're going to take this troll doll. You're going to comb its hair for one full hour. Then you're going to whisper to it, you're nothing to me, you little fucking troll. You're fucking no cheating. Worthless. And then in about 3 days, a man will come. He will be shaped as a troll doll. He'll shoot you in the head. You'll die. But then we bury your body and your ghost comes back and tell us, what did you need again? What? It, sorry, I lost myself.
That'll be $80.
That'll be $80. Oh, it's so great. And the fact that he actually does it is also just it's beautiful. Yeah, I love
because it's either that or do police work.
Yes, I mean he doesn't know what step one is for any of these cold cases, which I assume would be re-canvass the witnesses. I don't know, find one with some witnesses. And yeah, try. And instead he's like, no, I'll do some, some light vandalism at a graveyard if it'll get me some sort of wizard magic that tells me who did the murder. Sure.
But ultimately it is meant to show some loyalty because this yes. is like an episode where McNulty is like, yo, fuck up all the fake friends, where the real friends at, like to do a exactly. random Drake reference all of a sudden. Like he yeah. just doesn't trust anyone, right? And so yes. this is an example where you're like seeing outside the McNulty character. All right, there are people who are willing to stick themselves through their version of the mud, so to speak. I mean, like right. there's actual police work being done by McNulty. This is just cold cases here that eventually right. McNulty ends up solving. But it shows this guy's willing to go through the motions to, at least that's going through the motions and humiliating himself is option one to fucking over McNulty, as opposed to it being option, fucking over McNulty being option one. That shows right. some loyalty there.
Yeah, and I think McNulty at this point in the season is realizing how much he is being used by kind of everyone around him.
You got a friend here.
All due respect, I'm starting to worry more about the people who claim to love me than the ones that don't.
Yeah, to me that's just a weird scene. Like I mean, I understand the part where Judge Phelan wants to fuck Rhonda, which I appreciated.
Yeah, sure.
But
well, he doesn't just want to fuck. He wants to put a fuck into her.
Is right. That, I like that.
Throw a fuck into her, mm-hmm. which implies distance fucking, which I appreciate.
I would love to throw a fuck into her. Red hair, freckles.
It feels, again, like ugly bastard hentai, but like one of those poor translations. Like, I'm going to throw a fuck into her. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and I'm not entirely sure why so horny in the scene. Mm. And also not entirely sure why Jimmy doesn't kind of... Like, Jimmy gets a little butthurt at this scene. He's a little bit just like... he's mad that Phelan is busting his balls, which I thought kind of strange. He's like, I don't know, you seem to enjoy getting your balls busted.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated because like he's sort of pissed at Phelan for constantly burning him on on like giving him inside information, but then he keeps giving him inside information anyway. And then you throw the complication of Jimmy being sort of butthurt that Phelan is talking shit on his grammar of all things, where Jimmy's always, his thing is like wanting to be the smartest guy all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's like they tried to give too much at the same time. And then there's like that weird, Rhonda does like the Marvel dialogue where she's kind of just like looks at the camera and she's like, well, that just happened.
I think I'll go see a man about a dog.
I don't know. I don't consider that the, oh, so that happened. But I did consider that a awkward.
Yeah. Which, it's like she's reacting as if the other two people aren't in the room and they pretend not to hear her kind of thing.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, anyways, it's a scene in which Jimmy makes it clear that he's getting more and more suspicious that his plan, which is to use everyone around him for his own gains, is backfiring and that everyone is using him. And Santangelo seems to actually be the one person who, despite using him early on in this season, you know, feeding Rawls information, now he's decided it's too much and he is actually going to do something fairly selfless in terms of like he'd rather bury a, you know, a gypsy doll instead of snitch on a fellow cop.
What I think is one of the beauty of this part of The Wire is that you're seeing how, despite, not because of, but despite everyone's competing interests and individualistic pursuits in this business, in this world of policing, it's so as this microcosm of capitalism, so to speak, occasionally good things can happen.
Right.
It's like, despite everyone chasing their own interests, these cases are able to get solved. There is some like police work that's able to get done. They're able to like get further towards solving these murders and addressing these cases. So I think that's kind of what Simon, that's the creator guy, right? Like he's trying to get at with the whole, at least in this part of the episode or this part of the season.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of like the whole fiction sort of about possibilities. And so it's like not necessarily like realistic that you'd have this McNulty guy who was super smart and like solving all these things. It's like, that's kind of the part that you want to believe where like, what if there was a guy there who was able to solve all this shit, even in spite of, you know, all these like political
bureaucracy,
like going completely against him.
Yeah. Despite your regrettable Irish ancestry, occasionally that you do something correct. but yeah, the Santangelo thing also is a great, it's a great thread to watch in contrast to the actual police work that Jimmy and Bunk are doing regarding the Willie Gantt murder. So they like, they're doing their regular like canvassing around, investigating the murder, and then they help an old lady with her shopping cart in order to get her to spill some info, which she does. She gives them details of, you know, how far away the shooter was.
That was also weird too, because she's like, it's sort of like they made a point that she knows they're cops, like she's too smart for them, and it's like, yeah, he had a fucking gun on. He's wearing a button-up shirt with a pistol on his hip. Like, of course she knows they're cops.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I think she just wanted to let them know, like, I know you're cops. So if you're going to, you know, try to squeeze me for information, let's please do it inside. Yeah. That was my guess is what was going on. But she doesn't actually, you know, she's not going to testify. She's not going to, you know, identify Bird as the shooter herself, but they do have Omar's potential testimony to do that. So Bunk and McNulty go to a bar, and these are some of my favorite fucking scenes because I love drunk Bunk. If I could just hang out with Wendell Pierce for one night at a bar, I think it would make my life. He's
a wild card.
He's just so, his level of horny is the smoothest bumbling horny man I've ever seen. And I have a clip of them together at the bar.
One. Yeah.
Make it all up.
Rub them together like that.
God bless him.
I also feel like there wasn't a lot of like realistic tail chasing on television in 2002. Like,
yes.
It would always be, you know, women that are like models and like over the top attractive, because that's the pool that actors are pulling from usually. But like the Wire clearly like went above and beyond and went out of their way to get like realistic looking people to be in this show. And it feels like pretty realistic to like what they would actually be doing at a bar where,
Like the hot girl that they're after isn't like, she's not model level hot. She's like a mom. She's like a hot mom, but like not even a, like, you're just like, I
like
don't know what
slutty
the scales...
looking mom who would be out at a bar on a Wednesday at like midnight.
Yeah. And I love just from afar telling someone to rub their titties together. It's just so fucking funny. And
it's the kind of thing you'd see at like maybe a Halloween in Fresno, maybe.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If you're lucky, you know.
I do feel like Fresno probably has like, I feel like a high caliber of like lot lizard.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It's like that level of hot and then like that level of like bar behavior. I'd say.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. And it's a, they're all cops at the bar. That's what I assume.
And again, at least it's not Madeira. So we're still having
yes, fun. Yes. You are lucky for that.
Yeah. I was going to say all this talk about rubbing them together and ugly bastard hentai. I need a break. If you guys want to pause, rub them together, maybe play some ads. That'd be great.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Let's take a small break for some products and services that you may enjoy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Okay, we are back. Thank you, Brent. Love you, buddy. We're back at the bar with Bunk and McNulty, and they have, I think, if we're doing favorite, least favorite, my favorite scene in this episode is McNulty explaining to Bunk why he respects him. And I have a clip.
You know why I respect you so much, Bunk? It's not because you're good police, because, you know, fuck that, right?
Yeah, fuck that, yeah.
It's not because when I came to Homicide, you taught me all kinds of cool shit about, well, I don't know, whatever.
Whatever.
It's because when it came time for you to fuck me, you were very gentle.
You're damn right.
See, because you could have hauled me out of the garage and just bent me over the hood of a radio car. No, you were very gentle.
I knew it was your first time. I wanted to make that shit special.
It was, man. It fucking was.
I mean, the ability for Bunk to yes and this very homoerotic scenario is it's just wonderful. Just
yeah. So the fucking that he's talking about here, I mean, The Wire is always going above and beyond in terms of what it expects you to, like, what context it expects you to bring from, like, past episodes and just the general
welcome to HBO.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everybody does this now, but I feel like nobody was doing this when The Wire came out and everybody was just sort of baffled by it at the time. But, like, the specific fucking he's talking about, I assume he's talking about, like, when Bunk went on TV to do that press conference where they said, like, the guy was definitely not a witness. What's the specific fucking that's happening here?
I'm still trying to fully understand what the fucking is. I think part of the fucking is that Bunk is essentially pressuring Jimmy to get Rawls his clearance and kind of, you know, stop this nonsense. Just get him this clearance on Willie Gantt and all the arrests that aren't gonna, you know, hold water at trial. He's kind of telling him you need to do this, and then you need to kiss his ass in order to remain safe. Because at the end of the day, what Bunk is doing is about his own self-interest as well, which is that, like, McNulty is a great detective partner. He's good at solving crimes, and he doesn't want to be dragged down if something were to happen to Jimmy. And so I assume that he's just telling him, you know, you gotta stop all this, like, burning Rawls nonsense.
There's also, like, the question of, like, what would actually be better for society to have McNulty doing? Because, like, the way the show kind of structures it, it, like, sets us up to root for McNulty to take down this, like, drug organization, like Avon Barksdale's drug organization. But, like, how many times does that ever work out for the better? It's like the cops, like, when you take down a cartel, usually it creates, like, a power vacuum where, like, more people start shooting each other.
The other cartel becomes stronger.
Yeah, and then you just basically, you know, you get a different drug cartel in there. So, like, wouldn't it be probably better for everyone if he stayed, like, solving murder, since he's good at actually solving murder? I don't know. It's it's a little ambiguous, which I guess is perfect for the story that The Wire is telling about police work.
And I think leaving it open to the fact that Bunk is kind of warning McNulty, like, listen, like, Jimmy, you're gonna hit a certain level of where this goes, where you're going to realize that this is above your control. This is above your power to really make a difference. This isn't about you solving a case, all right? Like, this is like high level shit here. Right?
Yeah, like this is.
I think that's what he's trying to warn him about. Like, hey, kid, I see you being all like a boy wonder. I'm gonna save the world. All optimistic. Right. You don't know the game yet. You still think this is baseball. This is football.
Right. Mm. Like, it's like you're doing this crossword puzzle because it makes you feel good to fill in all the bubbles. But like, once you get done with that, like, what are you gonna get out of it? Like, you need to keep your job and not.
Bunk says as much actually in later episodes to Jimmy about like how and I think Freeman has the same kind of ethos, which is the job will not save you. And you know, there's no amount of, you know, it's like addiction. It's one is too many, a thousand is never enough. It's just like none of this is going to fill the hole that's in your soul. Yeah. You know,
you might want to build your kid's bed go to their soccer game instead of doing whatever you're doing right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, this is one of the problems of the Irish being impervious to therapy. the stakes, at least for Jimmy and for the audience watching now, is like, no, I want to watch Jimmy. You know, I want to watch him bring down the organization. Yes. and the collateral damage of also making every other cop and high, you know, fucking fat cat in either City Hall or like the fucking, you know, deputy ops, all those fools look like idiots. Yeah. And so you kind of are rooting for him for to accomplish both of these things.
Yeah, you're rooting for that amount of schadenfreude without caring about like the greater implications of whether like taking out the Barksdale gang actually does any good on in the grand sense of it.
And so in terms of taking out the Barksdale gang, in this episode, we get some real good use of the wire. You know, the wire just came up last episode. It took six episodes for them to actually put a wire up in the show called The Wire, but they did it and they're getting some good info. You know, right now they've had this plan that Freeman kind of like beat it out, where he was just like, we're gonna tail stink them. We know because of The Wire and because we cracked the code how much drugs he's gonna have in the car and where he's going and what time he's gonna be there. And so we're going to snatch the re-up, snatch the money, but we're not going to arrest Stinkum. We're going to let him get away because we don't want to burn the wire. And the plan kind of goes off without a hitch. They end up arresting this kid with an eye patch who turns out to be the kid that Prez blinded a few episodes ago. And you see this look on Prez's face when he comes into like the basement where the detail is set up, where he's just like, oh boy, how embarrassing this is for me. That's the child I blinded. and Daniels is like, oh, you know what? I'm gonna play the good cop here.
Yeah.
You hungry? Ham and cheese, too.
I want a Reese's, yo. Peanut butter cup.
Drink.
Tea in a can.
You got it.
Motherfucker can't even look at me.
What say we start over on this? The game already cost you, right? More than it should have, I know.
Whose fault is that?
His, ours, mine maybe. Thing is, I feel like I owe you something here. So I'm asking how you want to carry this. You want to get out? You want to do something else with the rest of your years? You come see me.
Motherfucker thinking he can pimp me over a candy bar.
He has fucking nothing to give the kid at all.
That's not true.
Other than fatherly advice.
Reese's Pieces and tea in a can.
Yeah.
And they're out of the tea, so they gave him an orange soda. The show is pro-police. The show is pro-police.
Yeah, you know, see, that's the thing about this show is that, like, it takes a nuanced view of the police in terms of like everyone is playing No one is playing their parts in any self-aware manner.
There's no character that's like the voice of God or like the sociologist. Like no one's
or
giving
the audience.
No one's just giving you the grand insight that they're trying to convey with the show to the audience. It's all just like characters that are
Bunch of villains,
completely self-interested and like largely incompetent at what they're trying to do.
Yes.
Like just the face of Lance Reddick, like you expect him, like when you see that guy, you're like, well, this guy clearly knows what's going on. This guy is going to give this kid like some good advice. And he certainly has something to offer this kid. And then he gets in there and it's like, no, he had a fucking orange slice and a business card. And that's what he thought was his bargaining chip.
Yes. And what's great about it is that his like, you know, hey, if you ever want to get out of this game, call me and you'll do what?
Yeah, like, what are you gonna do
if you're internship
gonna, unless you're gonna adopt the kid, like short of that,
no, you know what he's going to do. Like literally his thing is like, you know, if you ever want to get out of this game, could you snitch on some fools? so that we could get more clearances.
My cousin could teach you how to box.
yeah exactly. and I love it because the kid says, you know, this fool trying to pimp me for a candy bar. And I'm like, yes, that is, he's not wrong.
And on like the one level, like having the kid that Presbo blinded be the kid that they steal the re-up from, like, yeah, that is like a bit of a stretch dramatically. Like it's a bit of it's a bit of a coincidence to write in there for like in terms of creative license. But like, it's great that they don't let you enjoy the rehabilitation of Presbo as a character for more than like 10 minutes before they're like, oh no, here's the kid that he blinded from two episodes
right,
ago.
True. Yes. And Daniels, I think, has a great little B story in this episode. The next time you see Daniels, he goes to a fancy party. He goes to like a Democratic party with his wife Marla. And it's a $500 a plate fundraising dinner.
Well, this is the parody world of like the political games. Like you don't see the drugs here, but you kind of see some hints of the world of crime and politics kind of hinting out in this part too.
Well, the mayor might recognize my song, but the rest I pretty much need B of I photos.
You're not wrong, Lieutenant. In this state, there's a thin line between campaign posters and photo arrays.
And then like at this party, it's the same thing with Daniels. It's like you expect, like they're setting you up for Daniels to be the only like down to earth non like ruthless political animal at this party, and he sort of is, but like then he spends the entire party like just big dicking this guy Day Day, like kind of for no reason other than just like to feel this weird feeling of superiority over this guy. Like he just goes in there and like he takes great pains to let this guy know that he's a cop and he could fuck him over if he wanted
he gave him such a good opening though, dude.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he gave him a great one. I have a clip of that.
Who are you driving for? Marla Daniels. I love to crack this hair crib. Good day's work. What about the alarm system? Shit, I wire that weak ass thing back on itself, pull the truck up, bust through those French doors. That'll work. Yes, indeed. Said most of this good shit around the way, but some of it, like that art and all, I might have to run it up New York. Name's Damian Price, but I mostly go by Day Day. You said the Davis. But I mostly go by Lieutenant.
By the way, Daniels is doing a black scent when he's talking to Day Day, which is like super fucking, it's so warped when you think about it, because like as soon as he gets in there, he's like pretending to be a driver. And he says, instead of "what about the alarm system?" he goes, "what about the alarm system?" And then he goes, "that it work?" And it's like, man, you are.
It's an incredible nuance there, because like there's, for people of color, especially who are mixed, they know this like code switching thing of like how are you around your like once racial side of your family versus the other racial side of your family. But like there's a class thing too. Like there's an I'm interacting with like the hood class versus I'm interacting with the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, so to speak, right?
Right,
It's that different switching there that I'm amazed that for a show that didn't really focus on, you know, the strength of its acting quality. You know, there were some heavy hitting moments right there, and I think that was one of those good nuances. But
yes,
yeah, dude, like that's you don't openly talk about at this event with these like heavy hitting political people, like, oh yeah, here's how I would do it. Oh yeah, here's my business card for crime. Like, yeah, I do kind of disagree with that point where like he was unnecessarily big dicking him about Lieutenant. I mean, like, come, that it was a little bit of a West Wing style Sorkin-esque bit of writing,
yes,
but it was
yes.
a little bit like a come on. Mm-hmm. He was giving him the opportunity there based on how it was written.
Sure, he gave him an opening for a great bit, and also, you know, maybe Lieutenant is like his code name in the gang world. No, he knew he was a cop immediately. Also,
short for loot, get it?
Yeah. Shout out to Donnell Rawlings for playing the part of Day Day. I love him. He's a hilarious comedian. You've seen him on, like, you know, the Chappelle Show and shit like that. Fucking great. So after, you know, Stinkum is not arrested, but got pretty close, gets jacked by the cops, Avon decides to close the pit, calls in D, tells him, like, someone is snitching. That can be the only reason why we are, you know, constantly dealing with, like, either if it's not Omar and his stick-up crew, it's the cops. Someone's got to be talking. And so in an abundance of caution, he decides we're going to close down the pit for a while. And
which is great, because, like, you have to wonder what the HBO execs were. There had to be some notes where they're like, all right, you got this show called The Wire. You're going to take six episodes before we actually get a wire. And then The Wire itself is going to be gone within like 3/4 of an episode. Like, that's how long it's going to last before we pull the fucking thing out.
Oh, I love it. I think it's great, because that is, you know, to me, that's what makes the show good, is a show about The Wire, in which it's just like, I think it's because it's based on the assumption that everyone has about, like, you know, hey, they could be wearing a wire. And this show is about, like, do you know how fucking hard it is to get a wire?
Yeah. Well, and also, like, you said,
the wire.
Yeah. You can't keep a wire in this fucking. Yeah.
And then, like, and like you said, like, you see this episode, like, they're doing all this good police work and they have all this these good plans about why they're not going to take down Stink. They're just going to take down the runner because they don't want to have to show PC. And, like, it all goes off without a hitch. And then, like, 5 minutes later, it's like they fucking yank the thing anyway.
Yes. Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's what makes the show great. I love it. And so, yeah, String and Weebay go to the pit, and he talks to Bodhi and Poot and D and says, like, you know,
how often y'all changing the stash?
Oh, every night since we got Jack.
Anybody on the team getting high?
Nah, man, just the old touts.
I got no cell phones, no house phones, neither, right?
Nah, man, nothing but these pages and them pay boxes over there to sit.
All right, tear them motherfuckers out.
What?
From now on, y'all need a pay phone. You walk a few blocks and do not use the same phone more than once a day. You hear me, right?
Done.
You really do see that, like, there's a reason that the Barksdale organization has been able to operate and get so big and so strong while remaining completely under the radar for so long. I mean, the season really, you know, the series opens with the only person who knows about this downtown is McNulty, and literally every policeman from the lowest, you know, fucking officer to the deputy ops is like, who the fuck is Avon Barksdale? Well, it's because they actually do worry about shit like, oh man, there could be a wire. What they don't know is the majority of that time, they actually didn't need to be that careful because it's impossible to get the city to do that shit, especially a city that is essentially bankrupt. So, and then they do a sting. And I think what I love about this scene with the sting, where they're just waiting for Bird, is watching all of the different undercover disguises they all decide to wear. Like, watching Freeman's idea of, like, going undercover is just being kind of like the same guy with, like, kind of a worse shirt and drunk.
Yeah.
And then when Bubbles, like, we got the whole ensemble here. Bubbles sees Bird and they do the hat trick. puts the red hat on him. It's their way of saying that's who Bird is. And then Freeman just smashes him in the head with a 40 and arrests him. And I have just a quick clip.
Hey, Johnny!
Wait,
hey, Shorty is just so great.
Hit him with the Hennessy.
So yeah,
I feel like the one, arguably propaganda element of this episode is that they just made Bird like the most unsympathetic character that you could possibly imagine. Like, but by far, like the most irredeemable. Because most of the criminals in the show, even D'Angelo, who at this point we've been led to believe like murders women in cold blood and like is kind of a coward who shot a guy like in the lobby of the projects. Like D'Angelo is like pretty sympathetic for the most part. Like he seems like a guy that has intelligent thoughts and is introspective, and you could see yourself hanging out with. But then you got Bird, who is just, you know, calling everyone slurs and is completely unlikable to anyone, and is played by the guy from Onyx, who's claim to fame as being able to mean mug really well.
Yeah. I mean, I have kind of a different take on Bird. Like, yes, he is played as unsympathetic for sure, but he's also played as incredibly astute at doing a read on people, because despite the fact that Kima had to like straight up tell people in the police, you know, her police co-workers that she was gay, he knows immediately and starts just using a bunch of slurs.
Fuck you, fat man.
That gun is downstairs now in the ballistics lab. It comes back on a dead state's witness, and you're gonna see death row.
Suck my dick, dyke cunt.
Last chance to grab a little something for yourself on a deal.
Eat my shit first, you downtown white whore. Yeah, that's right. Take this ugly ass cunt eater with you too.
He reads Jay, calls him a fat fuck.
I mean, he reads Kima. It's not a tough read.
Yeah, Jay, I'll admit, easiest read. Then Kima, which I was like, he's got excellent gaydar at the very least. And then he calls Jimmy a white whore. He calls him a downtown white whore, which is, yeah, that's what Jimmy is. How did he know that? It's like he could smell his dirty dick from 3 feet away. He's like, I know you're disgusting.
This is just barbershop banter, honestly. Like, sometimes you're just like talking shit on someone, and it's like all jokes or whatever. But no, this was rapid fire, like straight from the clip. The dude knew how to throw them.
Yeah, yes, I mean, sometimes your first read is the correct one, though. Like, he's not troubled by like that second level, like maybe and caveats and that shit. He's like, he's shooting from the hip, and he's like, he's hitting the target every time.
We evolved this far because the gut check kind of works.
Yeah,
right?
Like, yeah.
I mean, I just like props to his character for being, to me, more than just kind of like this menacing, mean mugging, unsympathetic gangster. Like, he's also astute. So you got to give credit where credit is due.
But he definitely, like, they almost work overtime to make you not feel bad that the cops are going to kick the shit out of him.
But also, I mean, I also do think that, like, the way the actor delivered the line, you know, like,
yo, I'm cuffed, man. You gonna at least give me a fair chance, right? Yo, come on, man. Don't do me like that, man.
That, to me, made it a much more dark and less, like, it's the catharsis I think you think the audience is feeling. I'm not sure if they do. I think they're looking at that and going, Jesus.
Right.
They're not even, they're just going to all beat the shit out of him and he's not even.
But they're also kind of saying it as like, oh, we have evidence that we have the gun that was used to kill this innocent person who was here. And like, listen, you may not get justice. You may be able to like weasel out of this or whatever. But tonight, in the words of Hank Hill, we're kicking your ass.
In the words of Hank Hill. Please, yes, we need more King of the Hill references on this show.
honestly. That, ladies and gentlemen, and then everyone else is a callback. But no, mm-hmm. this is the cop part I really wanted to get to because, yeah, definitely in a vacuum, it is the part where, and it's one of the parts where they're glorifying, hey, listen, they solve crimes and sometimes they're imperfect and they are shitty husbands and they get drunk and they drunk drive and they talk about firing their gun at pigeons mm-hmm. in front of their wives and or like varmint in front of their wives and shit. Like, yes. Like these are terrible people. And you know what? Every time they get into, every once in a while, they wrestle with the convicts, right? But you know what? Yeah. At the end of the day, these are good people too. It's sort right. of, you can read that way with some aspects of the show, but mm-hmm. I also think, like, I was watching Starship Troopers recently again, like, as a mm-hmm. Zoomer not having any context to that, and I was like, wait, like, major newspapers actually thought this was celebrating fascism?
Right.
This is like, all these people are miserable. Their lives yes. are terrible to the extent that they have lives. Like,
yes.
They are short and terrible and filled with, like, the noticeable, like, depicted absence of joy that mm-hmm. we would normally get. Like, they are as miserable and as, like, devoid of character as some of the criminals that are depicted in the show, right? And I think yes. that's one of the beauties of The Wire, is that it kind of puts everyone on a level playing field. So it's a yes. it's a much more complex depiction than just saying, like, oh, it's like cops are good, it's just all propaganda. Right. It's like, no, it's a very complicated depiction that, yeah, you could argue was maybe, like, very long-winded maybe at times, but it's important to show that dynamic and to continually show that, not fall into the culture war discourse yeah. trademark yeah. of 20 years later.
Right.
100%. Yeah, I do feel like it is important to take the show, like, when you have these, like, individual storylines, you know, these A plot and B plots of an individual episode, you can't look at that alone and go, oh, well, this is, you know, this is the pro-cop part or mm-hmm. the, you know, the copaganda. It's like, I don't know how you watch this show without looking at it from a macro level.
I mean,
like,
I think at worst they were doing what Team America World Police did in that mm-hmm. monologue where they're like, pussies hate dicks because dicks fuck pussies, but dicks right, yeah. also fuck
so
assholes.
Fuck assholes.
Yeah. Which was yeah. sort of like the brilliant sort of takedown of, like, this entire, like, the way this entire plot structure works in general, mm-hmm. which is like, oh yeah, Jack Bauer might stab an old lady in the arm, but he's gonna find out who is doing terrorism, kind of thing.
Yeah, right. So it's justified.
So it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. As said by a drunk man in a fucking yeah. in a bar,
drunk,
in Team America.
Disgusting man who just climbed out of a pool with his sandwich for some reason.
Yeah.
And is now talking about jacking his limp dick off to a child.
So they beat up, the bird gets beat up, and meanwhile, Bunk is kind of grilling Omar on why he's witnessing on Bird, and then you find out that Omar knows Bunk from high school. They actually went to the same high school, and I love this scene because it's just like, there's something about the reminiscing about lacrosse that they have.
I mean, there's a whole can of worms that they're opening there. Like, you're like, oh God, like, okay, so what was this school? Was this a mm-hmm. private school? Were both Bunk and Omar going to the same private school? And then, like, what?
No.
I mean,
they were public school kids.
Right. But then, like, like, they have lacrosse at public school in Baltimore? That's wild, too.
I could see that. I could see that, especially if, like, every other, like, DC area, Maryland area,
yeah,
prep
it is
school.
Maryland.
Yeah, it's Maryland. There's, like, all the private schools and prep schools and shit have lacrosse. And they probably were like, oh, here's a publicly funded lacrosse team. And, you know, that's, I don't know. I feel like that rings true to me.
And no, it does. And I liked it just because it sort of opens up the story to, like, all these associations and interpretations that you could make just based on this one, like, fairly believable connection that they have.
Yeah. I have a clip of that.
So why'd you step up on this?
Bird trifling, basically. Killing everyday working man and all. I mean, don't get it twisted. I do some dirt, too, but I ain't never put my gun on nobody who wasn't in the game.
A man must have a code.
Oh, no doubt. Hey, man, I know you from somewhere.
Yeah?
You go to Edmondson, right? Yeah, you was ahead of me. I remember you was the first brother I ever seen play that sport with a stick. What's it called?
Lacrosse, man.
For sure.
Yeah. I was all Metro Attack. Prep school boys used to pee themselves when they see the old bunk coming at them, you know? Oh, man. So look here, homie. Seeing as how you being all charitable with your recollections, what else you got in the way of open murders?
Going to Barksdale?
Going anywhere.
How far back you want me to go?
As far as you need. Murder stay murder.
So at that point, we find out that Omar ends up giving Bunk this murder of, is an open murder of someone named Denise Redding, Niecy, as he calls her. And we see the Santangelo plot come back in, I think, a really like elegant, hilarious way, in which they call him up and tell him that basically it's down, this other open murder that he has. What's nice about it is that it's not the one he was working on. It was some other random open murder that he happened to be assigned to. And
this is a long time ago callback, but when we were talking about Inside Llewyn Davis on the Fraudcast, and you know, like, it's one of my favorite movies, and there's like the cat that might be magical in that movie.
Magic cats.
Brett says like every movie should have a magical cat. Like this murder is like the magical cat of this episode. Like it's always good. It's great to do like really grounded fiction, but like when you give people the hint that there is like this other sort of cosmic level that it's operating on, like it's always so much better because it allows you to sort of, you know, dream of possibilities,
suspend disbelief for a little bit. And you know, and also the fact is that this isn't a magical cat, and I think that is this is one of the more, I don't know, this is what I liked about it, was that Santangelo shows up and he starts thanking Jay, his sergeant, like, oh, thank you for, you know.
For introducing me to that gypsy.
Madame fucking LaRue. I gotta thank you, Jay Bird. You saved my fucking life here. Only thing I can't figure is I asked for help on the Lindsay case, not this one.
Fuck the gypsy shit. These are the guys that saved your ass right here.
Hey, Jimmy. We got to talk, man.
I'm shocked that he needed someone to say that to him. It's like, yeah, bro, obviously it wasn't the gypsy magic.
Yeah. The guy that goes to the gypsy in the first place needs someone there to say like, hey, it wasn't the gypsy actually.
So he tells Jimmy we need to talk. And then the final scene is Jimmy goes to Rhonda's house all sad.
Drunken fuck on a Tuesday night? Is it Wednesday morning?
I'm not drunk. Rawls. He's going after my badge.
What?
They're gonna do me, Ronnie. They're gonna do me. I love this fucking job. They're gonna do me.
I think he wants to do her because he's like, well, if I'm gonna get done, I would like to at least
get done.
I mean, just classic fuckboy maneuvers that you
really
get laid
though.
By being sad.
This is the most fuckboy thing ever, is him showing up and just being like, man, I love this job and they're going to take it away from me. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. You want to have sex with my Jewish pussy? And then he's like, you hoity toity, I do want to have sex with your Jew pussy. You killed Christ. So an Irishman.
They're trying to take my job. I had a pot of gold and I hid it for years. And now they're trying to take it from me.
Yes. So they I assume they fucked. So that ends that storyline. The final storyline is real quick. Johnny Weeks is in court for his arrest. Bubble shows up with Kima, and she's actually able to help Johnny stay out of jail if he agrees to drug court, which is a real thing. And also, I think this for me remains, and The Wire in general remains, the most accurate depiction of the jails and institutions and 12-step programs that actually exist for addicts in cities. I've said this before, but in most TV and movies that I've watched, including The Sopranos, they just don't know how to do NA. They don't know how to do 12-step meetings. They make the 12-step meetings feel like kind of a way of moving a particular plot point around. It's a way of doing exposition, kind of the same way therapy is a way of doing exposition.
It's only just for moving plot points. That therapy is useless other than just exposition for yourself. Yes. And moving plot points for yourself otherwise. You could just get a writer, hire a writer, and just do what a therapist would do otherwise.
Right.
It'd be more entertaining. And sell it to Netflix.
Exactly. That is literally like, it's one of the things that drives me crazy as someone who goes to 12-step meetings is like, you wonder, like, what? Just have, there's got to be one person who's an addict on the writing staff or who's a producer who's like, no, that's not what they look like. This show actually shows what NA meetings look like. Like, they are these, you know, not all of them, of course, is a lot of different places, but they're usually in a kind of like community center, a bunch of fold out chairs, and they are the most like cross section of every kind of person in society. Like you see like your fucking middle class white boy there. You see people who are, you know, they came in from a rehab bus. You see like neighborhood people, like every race, every gender, every age, and they're sitting around. Some are looking bored. Some are into it, and they're listening to, you know, Steve Earle talking about how his addiction is, you know, doing push-ups, waiting for his chance to get him high again.
Well, hell, y'all all know I'm Waylon, and I'm an addict. Hey, Waylon. And the fact is that I want to be clean today more than I want to be high.
I know that's all right. All right.
It's good to be here. Hell, it's good to be anywhere clean. Even Balmer. I've been cleaned a few 24 hours now, and I'm still dead certain that my disease wants me dead. Yeah, I'm in here with y'all talking shit about how strong I am, how strong I feel, but my disease is out there in that parking lot doing push-ups on steroids waiting for the chance to kick my ass up and down the street again.
Yeah, who's clearly like, this is like his outlet for like his natural Scatman thing that he's always wanted to be, where he's doing this sort of spoken word stand-up comedy slash like slam poetry thing in the middle of it.
It's a great character because it feels like you're hearing shit that you do hear at meetings all the time. And it's not just the fucking platitudes that you would hear on like The Sopranos. Like his share feels like it was a real share. Mm-hmm. And
but it's got jokes in it that you can tell this is a story that he's told 7 or 8 times at least.
Exactly. Before. Exactly. Yeah. That was the other thing. The share did feel like, oh yeah, he gets invited to lead a lot of meetings because people like he's got a lot of clean time. And he's funny and interesting, and everyone wants him to be their sponsor. And they also do one thing that I really, really love. It was that when Bubbles, he gets his Just for Today chip, which is the, you know, the one that's like, you either have 24 hours or a sincere desire to live. And he gets his chip. And there is something real about like that smile that you have when a room full of people clap for you for wanting to be clean. You do feel kind of good about it. So I loved that for me personally, that was great. I also loved all of Johnny's reactions to Waylon's share, which was just like every time he was like, you know, I lost a good wife, a bad girlfriend, you know, my kids. And Johnny has this look like, ugh. Could never be me.
Yeah.
as if like his life is fucking great. Like he's seeing vulnerability and he's acting exactly as you would if you were an addict, which is like, fuck this. I'm just here for someone to sign my court card. And then they shoot up again and Bubble signs his court card for him.
And I think that again shows that addiction, it's like a high and low process for people who have been through it or people who have been around people who are through it. And you ultimately see Bubs as like a multifaceted character.
Yeah.
Like you just like he has different motives. A lot of those motives are kind of pure. A lot of those motives are like the next dumb little heist, the next silly little adventure to get the next high. Like,
it's really,
it just depends.
He's a dreamer at the end of the day, you know? It's like he dreams not only of like whatever his next fucking heist is, right? You know, I'm going to steal the copper back from the wall and then we're going to sell it again. But he also is like, he's taking that 24-hour chip with the dream of someday, you know, being able to celebrate it for realsies. So it makes him an interesting and multidimensional character, more so than Johnny is, who just kind of is a bumbling idiot. And also, you know, for as two-dimensional as or one-dimensional as Johnny is, he does remind me of a lot of addicts that I've known.
Well, plus he's younger. Like Bubs is getting to the age where you might realistically be like, "Hey, this is going to be hard for me." Whereas Johnny's young. He hasn't started worrying about that shit as much yet.
Yeah, he's still green.
It's a fair depiction. Yeah.
Yeah. But you can tell it's planted a little bit of a seed with Bubbles. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, there's a place I can go if I decide I don't want to live like this anymore.
Yeah, and Steve Earle's there.
Yeah, and I guess if I had to give this episode a letter grade, which I do because I've set that standard for myself, I think I would give it a B+. Yeah, Vince, what would you give this episode?
I think I genuinely would give this a B+.
Oh, okay, all right.
This is genuinely like a pretty solid but not perfect episode of The Wire.
Absolutely. Dan, what would you give this episode of The Wire?
B+ is pretty solid. That was about how I achieved at this time when I was a kid.
You were a B+ student at
in sixth grade. B+, absolutely.
You're getting letter grades.
I was in the gifted programs, and I've been screwed ever since.
So a B+ episode of The Wire and an A+ episode of Pod Yourself The Wire. Dan from the internet, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking The Wire with us.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's really fun.
Yeah. So where can people find you on the old internet?
Oh God, I do too much. Just follow me at Dan from the Web on Twitter for all the things I do, whether it's Good Morning Bad News, whether it's appearances on TYT or all the other things, whether it's Power Report for political stuff or on Twitch where I live stream every week, or Audio Face where I talk about music. It's sort of a similar cultural thing to this as well. I'm doing all those things. Just follow me at Dan from the Web on Twitter to keep track of all that wonderful stuff.
Hell yeah. Follow him, Dan from the Web, on all of the platforms. Thank you so much for coming, Dan. Patreon.com/Frotcast for all of the bonus episodes. The $8 tier gets you a gangster name. And we have a few this week. Vince, are you ready to help these new patrons out?
Yes, yes.
Okay, first is AJ Guzman.
AJ? That's not a name, that's just letters. We're going to call this guy Alphabet.
Ooh, okay, sick. All right. Next is Alberto Del Rio Medina.
Yeah, we call this guy Quattro because he's got four names.
Four names, Quattro's that's good. Next is Charlie McFarland.
Yeah, we call this guy the Mick.
Yeah, that works, because Tim Purcell.
Purcell. Yeah, we call this guy the Battery.
Okay.
I was thinking the same thing, too, like Duracell.
Yeah, Duracell. There we go.
Trusted everywhere.
And two more, Carl Thiessen.
I think it's Thiessen. I mean, I know it's Thiessen.
Okay.
Yeah. We call him the Green Man.
Why?
It's just I know that guy, and it's a
okay.
This is my brother-in-law, and he does a bit with my friend's 3-year-old where he pretends to puke money. Don't ask me how he came up with this bit. And the 3-year-old started calling him the Green Man because he throws up money. And
I love it.
Apparently, kids love pretend vomit. Don't ask me.
They love it.
Yeah, how he knew that or why.
Well, thank you for throwing up some money on our Patreon.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, the Green Man. Okay. Yeah, it works.
And finally, Travis Jacobson.
We call this guy Iceland. What is it? That sounds like a Viking
I think it
name.
Would have to be S-E-N for it to be.
You know what? They don't. The listeners don't know how it's spelled. They don't have.
That's
the,
true.
They don't have the Google Doc in front of them.
All right, fair enough, Travis. What'd you call him? Iceland.
Iceland. Okay.
We're gonna call him Travis Iceland yep. Jacobson, and that is all of the $8 patrons for this week. If you want to have your name shouted out on the podcast and given a cool gangster name, patreon.com/frogcast. And if you haven't heard your name yet, don't worry, it's coming. Frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, if you come at the king, you best not miss.
Making my way downtown with Kima and McNulty. I'm a snitch now. Hell yeah. I'm a snitch. Staring blankly ahead, just looking for bird, looking for bird in the towers. And I'll haunt you, and I kill you. And then I plunder. If I could draw out Barksdale's guys, get one arrest for Avon's crimes. Cause you know I'd steal $1,000 if I could just Avon. Brandon, I'm Omar. It's the Bumblebee story. Jimmy, Pressure sent Angelos to start snitching. Sant'Angelo is stressed, he's doing his best, and Jay Lansman sends him to a gypsy. Ross will do you, yeah, he'll screw you. It makes me wonder, will Major kill Jimmy's wire, or will a gypsy solve a cold case file? Yeah, bitch, you know Rawls would lose 1,000 trials if he could go from red to black. Making my way downtown, sucking dicks, eating butts and sucking more dicks. Sucking dick, eating butts, giving some guy a head while we are in bed, and then his grandma comes and we fuck her. Fucky sucky, eat a buddy, big milky titties. If I could suck a whole milky titty, and then I take the milk and make some dairy products with it. I would make some ice cream from titty milk, and it would be thick and nutritious. Fuck, sucky, fucky, fucky, sucky, fuck, fuck. Ooh, my butt. Everybody eat butts and suck it. The song is long. Vanessa Carlton, also Stephen Jenkins. I'm pretty sure Stephen Jenkins wrote this song. What a bitch, my name is Element, and I flap, 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 flap. Oh, okay. I realize I don't know this song very well. Oh, I feel pressure. Good enough.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.